I guess that discussion of like putting yourself forward when you see the when you see the email and saying yes, I'm going to answer and I guess take the initiative. It's a good introduction to the Megillah of Ruth because everybody knows that we read Ruth on Shavuot, but nobody entirely knows why. You know, the connection between Ruth and Shavuot. So all the classic answers are.
Except for the fact that when you drive to Rabbi Levi and you see them harvesting the wheat on the way.
Right, he makes
the
chitin.
Sitting in the chicken coop in Bechilke and you see them
harvesting the wheat?
I don't know if it's a kollel or yeshiv, whatever, they're there and the boys are on their bikes with
wheat.
That's so cool.
I just like. I love driving down and you see the like the wheat fields how they turn, you know. So and this is Vayihi b'mei k'tzira chitim, but in the Megillah when they come back it's k'tzira se'orim. So I'm not entirely sure the difference between the barley season, from my understanding, is a little earlier than Shavuot. But the k'tzira chitim happened a little later when you know the whole story continued of the cutting of the barley continued, the cutting of the wheat continued. That's really the meat of the story when Ruth is hanging out with Boaz and sort of gleaning the field, etc., etc.
And I don't understand because. I thought that you cut the wheat in the winter because you have to bring the Korban Omer and that's why you can't eat Kadash.
Omer, the Korban Omer is barley. Barley ripens before wheat.
Okay.
You can just see now. I mean, just that. This is
how
like.
How can people keep Kadash and flour?
I mean, how can they keep Kadash and flour? No, Kadash is on any grain. Okay, so the Korban HaOmer was brought, right? The Korban HaOmer was brought at the very beginning of the new crop. So therefore, anything from that that Pesach on that had grown already is okay. It makes sense. But the things that were from that you had grown after, that you had seeded after Pesach, that you had planted after and then grew subsequently, that was not okay. So you see, it's in Israel, it's a little more, I would say, straightforward because pretty much the whole wheat crop was planted, like you see now. It was already the season is made in such a way that it's planted. It grows all winter long. It dries out. And this is exactly what the Torah is designed on.
Why it's not a problem here?
Why?
There are two reasons it's not a problem here. First of all, a lot of the flour is imported.
Right, okay.
You can't grow enough flour. And the other thing is that they actually keep a year's stock.
Is that true? I don't know.
So I remember when I moved here 10 years ago, because we were, and I was in MMY, if you look in Yerushalayim, next to Angel's Bakery, there are these huge, vats and silos. And supposedly, it's because they're always afraid of...
You know how much that wheat must last them like, you know, a couple of days or something. You know, I never believe.
They're like a whole silo is delivered to
right.
You gotta do divine every day.
So anyway, you can see one of the things that I like about driving around here is you drive around and you see the seasons. You see actually the seasons of the Torah, right? You see that you smell it too, right? That the wheat is ready and then it dried out and now they're cutting down the wheat. You know what I'm saying? This is exactly the season. So that would be one reason. Another reason obviously is the Mashiach that they talk about, that David HaMelech was born and that's the Imot HaMashiach, but that's a little weird because what's the connection between that and Shavuot? The third one, which is the most common one, is that Ruth was a Gioret and she was Mekabel the Torah. She accepted the Torah upon herself. So therefore, we, when we accept the Torah upon ourselves also, we remember the Megillah, we remember the story of Ruth, which is also very nice. So I want to talk about, though, a deeper theme that appears quite frequently in the Megillah, and I think has a lot to say to us, speaks to us a lot about an important message that we can learn for Shavuot as well. And we'll hopefully get this from noticing some things in the beginning and the end of the Megillah. It says in the Megillah, we're in Ruth, the very beginning, Vayihi b'mei shefot ha-shoftim, Vayihi ra'av ba'aretz, vayelech ish mibet lechem Yehuda, vagor bisdei Moab, hu v'ishto ushnei banav. Okay, I'll translate. And it was in the days of the judging of the judges, and there was a famine in the land, and a man went from Beit Lechem Yehuda, right, Judea, vagor bisdei Moab, to live in the fields of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. This pasuk raises a number of very interesting and obvious questions, both linguistic and I guess ideological or theological, etc., etc. Anybody want to shout out a question to me?
Why do you leave?
Well, there was a famine. He left because there was a famine.
I know, but
okay.
cares when it was? Like, what's the connection between the famine, his leaving, and the time of the Shavuot?
Good. What is Vayihi Bimei Shavuot HaShoftim? What does it mean that there was during the time of the judges? Yeah? What do you
what's
mean?
What's the connection between that?
In the, it's interesting to note. What would you say if you were going to say it was in the time of the... What would you say if it was the time of the Shoftim?
The book is not written like that.
Which Shoftim?
No, hold on. What would you say if it was in the time of the Shoftim? Vayihi?
Bimei,
whoever.
No, what if you want to say just in general, the Mayor of the Shoftim? What would you say? Right, what does it say?
Shavuot HaShoftim, but it's...
Sounds so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, but that doesn't... it seems like a fair question, doesn't it? Shavuot HaShoftim, the times the judges were judging? That's a little weird. Would it, when an author would write that way, he's trying to tell you something. Okay? You don't think so? I think so.
Trying to tell you exactly when it was.
Right.
That more maybe about the genetical fact that he's trying to
say. You could still say Vayihi Bimei HaShoftim. What is the like, time of judging of the judges?
I mean, because...
Maybe the judges were judging him.
Ah, somebody's judging someone. Okay, that's the question. Okay, Vayihi Ra'av Ba'aretz, ideological question Chazal try to figure out is...
Why is there a Ra'av?
Yeah, there's always a good question. There's something a little bit more interesting. Vayelech ish mi beit lechem Yehuda, hu lagur b'stei Moab, hu b'ishto shnei banav. Just translate. Let's translate. A man went from
like a city mouse went to a
meaning what? Right.
Went from the city to the country.
Okay, but with something even more glaring that should sort of jump out at you.
People,
a man.
I mean, it's clear that he's going
to his name.
Like
yes. Who is he?
Sentence, says.
Good, fine. So why wouldn't you say Vayelech Elimelech mi Beit Lechem Yehuda istur agur b'stei Moav hu ushda so ushnei banav. Okay, it's an obvious, like you say, someone's writing this book, so there's an obvious literary device. What's the literary device here? There's this man, and he's anonymous. Okay, we're going to see that this idea of anonymity is not limited only to this man. We're going to know who he is.
It's like the first pasuk is very anonymous.
Yes, it is very anonymous. Okay, Vayelech ish. There once was a man, and he went, like, if I wrote a book that way, and I submitted it to my editor, what would he say?
It's superfluous.
Come on. Like, it's too much, okay? So what exactly is the verse trying to say? Besides, if you're going to tell me his name later on, why say, Vayelech ish mi beit lechem Yehuda, right, some man. A man went, and his name was. You know, you don't really think about these things when you read it straight through, but when you try to analyze it, you see, that's a good question. Why does it first tell me and not tell me his name, and then let it tell me who he is? Okay, so I'm going to read you some very, very interesting midrashim. And the midrash is very, very, very clear about what happens to this ish. What's his name? His name is Elimelech. We'll read on a little bit. V'shem ha'ish Elimelech. His name is Elimelech. V'shem ishto Na'ami. His wife's name is Na'ami. V'shem shnei banav Machlon v'chilyon Ephratim. Mibet Lechem Yehuda, right? His son's names were Machlon and Chilion. They were from Ephrat, from Beit Lechem. Vayavos de Moab vayiyusham. And the name Elimelech, what does that tell you, Elimelech? What kind of name does that strike you as? Right, Elimelech. Elimelech, right? Just, it's a good name. It's a nice name, okay?
Also, Ephrat and Beit Lechem are two different places.
Probably a region, the Beit Lechem region. Ephrata, I don't know. Good question. I'm not up on my biblical geography.
No, but with Shmuel also it says something about Elkanah, something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
It says, Echad min ha-ramatayim sofim mehar Ephraim. And at the end, Ben Rucha ben Elihu ben Tohu ben Tzuf Ephrati. That they call him an Ephrati also.
There's a very big question. If today's Beit Lechem in Ephrat is there, or if it's more in the area that's now called like Hare Ephraim. Because if you think about the whole story, we have a Mesorah, that Kever Rachel is where Kever Rachel is. But if
most people really don't think that Kever Rachel is actually anything, but okay.
Right, it's probably more, it's actually we don't talk probably about that, more yeah. Towards where Beit El is, because if you think about where Yaakov was coming from, doesn't it make sense that he would bury her? He wasn't
coming that way, right.
He was coming from the north. He was coming from, like, from the Golan.
Okay.
From Syria, right? And then also when B'nai Israel the whole Masoret of Kiver Rachel is that Bnei Israel passed
on the way to Babel.
Correct. Which is also north, and if Bnei Israel, we assume it's like, you know, the Galut from Yerushalayim and from like Hare Yehuda, they went north.
So where is Rachel actually buried?
So that's why some people say it's whatever.
And, okay.
And that's why Ephrat is actually called Ephrata.
Didn't Rabbi Riskin name it Ephrat? Can he like make it up?
No, they're not. We don't know if that's really where Ephrat was.
Okay. Well, these things I've posted. Many people like need to know that David HaMelech is buried in Kever David, and you know, Rachel is buried in Kever Rachel.
Other than Hebron.
Doesn't really
matter. Other than Hebron.
Right. You don't really know. Okay. So what happens? Vayamat Elimelech Ishnami, Vatishair Hushnevaneh. Tragedy strikes, and Elimelech dies. Okay. Why does he die? We'll talk about it. Vayisu lahem nashim Moabiyot. They married Moabite women. Shema Echat Orpa, Veshema Shanit Rut, Vayeshvu Sham Keser Shanim. They lived 10 years. And what happens? Tragedy strikes again. Vayamutu gam shnehem machlon v'chilyon. They died. Vatishaer Aisha mishnei yeladea umisha. And this woman, this poor woman, is left alone from her two sons and from her husband. And then we're going to see, you know, it is a pretty tragic story. The whole story is very sad. They're living in Beit Lechem Yehuda. He's, you know, as the Midrash describes him as a relatively important, significant person, right? He leaves Beit Lechem, goes to Moab, right? He dies, his sons die, and this poor woman is left kind of bereft.
There is some irony in that if he's leaving Beit Lechem Yehuda for a famine,
right,
and then as soon as he gets where he's going, he dies.
Right. Why did he leave for the famine? So that the Midrash wants to know, what in the world did he leave for the famine? So before, I'll start with this. It's, why does it say, Vayhibi mei shofot foda shoftim and Vayhi ra'ab? Says the Midrash. Okay? The fi shahayu shoftim rishaim ve'en danim din emet la'amito haya ra'av baretz. What's the purpose of a famine? Right, we believe that famine is a message from God. What's the message? The message is your leaders aren't leading you properly and they're not rebuking you. Right, a leader's job is to tell the people, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to change. And what was the big sin in the times of the Shoftim? Anybody know the big sin in the time of the Shoftim in general? What? Avodah Zarah, idolatry. That was a big one. But there were other smaller ones as well. Okay. The Otozman. Elimelech shofet haya b'shoftim. So Elimelech was a shofet. It wasn't just vayibim shavot ha-shoftim. Elimelech wasn't some guy. He wasn't the plumber. He was one of the leaders. V'hu ish zarua, and he was a powerful man. V'anashim rabim tachat yado. And he was in charge. He was like a leader. He was like, you know, on the city council or whatever. V'haya ro'eh ha-tzara v'ha-ra'av. And he saw the pain and the anguish and the famine. And he decided not to get involved in the rebuke business, but instead, what did he do? He ran away. Turned tail and ran. That's one interpretation of what Elimelech did. Another interpretation of what Elimelech did, okay, is the following. Listen to this version of the Midrash. Very interesting. Elimelech haya ish chashuv. Important person. Shemechashvim oto bimkomo. Very important. Halach latzil et nafsho v'nefesh beito. Why did he leave?
Save himself
and his family. V'lo tarach atzmo b'iskei tzibur. K'mo shehu adam chashuv. But Yamin was the He decided, well, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to get out of this famine? How are we going to, we're all going to pull together by our bootstraps? No. I got to get out of here. We got to leave. Sorry. Okay? V'yaminu lidvaro l'hashiva mi'ra'atam. The irony is, according to the Midrash, Elimelech had the ability to change them. They would have listened. Of course, that's all hindsight. But he didn't. He didn't say anything. So therefore, they didn't do tshuva. Ulafikach, and therefore, says the Midrash, Iralo. What happened to him? That's the irony. Right? You see, the irony is he went to save himself. He left in order to save himself. And in the end, what happens? He dies. Well, Hashem sends a message. And so this is the theme that I would like to focus on in the Megillah, because I think it's one of the primary themes, and you'll see it as you think about it in different ways over and over again. This theme of taking responsibility versus the notion of shirking responsibility. That Elimelech, and the reason why Elimelech has no name, I believe, is anonymous in the beginning of the Megillah, at least before we know who he is. Because anyone, according to the Megillah, in the ideology of Ruth, will see that someone who does not take responsibility and take achrayut, not just for himself, but for the general people, for the broader nation, that person has no name. That person doesn't deserve the benefit of identity. Right? Your identity is in that you take responsibility for other people. And Elimelech didn't do that. He turned tail and ran. Other midrashim say that it was very simple. People were asking for money. He was a rich man. People were asking for money. Right? So he got tired of the shneiros coming to his door. So what did he do? He left. So why should I have to, what?
He does what I do. Don't answer the door.
Don't answer the door. Ay. That's a challenge. It is a challenge. Okay.
Don't give money at the door. You can rack me later.
That's what you say? You don't give money at the door? I usually leave it to about a sub by 5 shekel.
Johnny does.
You know, I think
I'm on my own. I'm not answering the door.
I think you Shachaf and you Shachaf and Slav people like down there, you must get a lot more than we get.
We get everything.
Because I think there's like a shmuah, like we're in like the Israeli region, so you know, in the Chutznik region.
No.
Really? When you're not answering the door. Well, I hope this shear doesn't make you feel too guilty. Okay?
No, I don't think a woman should open the door.
I don't think a woman should open the door either. Send your husbands. Okay. No, but that is, I really don't think so. I don't think it's appropriate. Or, right. But there's also the idea of, imagine, like, think about yourself. How many Jews were living in Moab at the time?
None.
Right. Is it just... What is Elimelech thinking? Yeah. Right. In the middle of, you know, like, what do you think is going to happen to your children? What happens to his children? They marry out. Why do they marry out? Who else are they going to marry? You move to Moab. What exactly do you think would happen? And there's a certain irony in that as well. That as much as Elimelech thinks that he's the one supporting them, and as much as he thinks that he's the one that they need, and he's going to run away and save himself, but he doesn't realize to the fullest extent is, we need them. Like, we need each other. You know, if you don't have a Jewish community, you want to move to Moab and save yourself. You know, great, you saved yourself. You're living the lap of luxury, but your children marry goyim, and your grandchildren aren't going to be part of the Bnei Israel.
Right. There is also, I just noticed that because he's leaving to protect his family, and he almost immediately, it seems the way the Pesukim is presenting it, he almost immediately dies, which makes him unable to further protect his family, and that could be maybe why his children. It was like the lack of the father leadership in the lands of Moab, because she just couldn't, you know, like, am I expressing what I'm...
I'm not sure what you're trying to say.
Like the father left, right.
Probably blind children, but the message she's giving to them from the
it's family you. First. No, but family first.
Exactly what his sin was. We just
take care of number one.
Right, but also family first. He's like family first, and then Hashem kills him right away. So like he can't even take care of his family.
Right, he dies right away. So that's the kind of mida kenegan mida. That's what you're trying to say.
Right.
Okay. Now let's look at his children's names: Mahlon and Kilion. Can somebody translate for me the names Mahlon and Kilion? Right, and?
Destruction.
Right, it doesn't remind you of, remember that movie Hercules? Like, this is my son, Death, and my other son, Destruction. You know what I'm saying? So the Midrash wonders, the Gemara wonders, obviously, interestingly enough, what's their real name? So it's Machloket. Is this their real name? So the name's really, did he really name his children Mahlon and Kilion? So according to one opinion that I find more authoritative or convincing, their real names were, one second, that they had different names, Saraf and Yoash. Saraf. I guess so, right. Yeah, sort of burning and Yoash.
Punishment.
Okay, good one. I don't know, right, Mahlon and Kilion. Right, exactly. But what that gives you the sense of is, again, that Mahlon and Kilion, no one of their real names, they're probably like Shmuley and Yossi. You know what I'm saying? I mean, but we don't know their names. Why don't we know their names? Not important. They don't have an identity. In without the context of an Israel, without the context of the Jewish people of living and taking responsibility, they don't have a name. They don't have an identity, and their identity is not significant to us. Okay? So the Torah, the Midrash says, Vayamat Elimelech, says again the Midrash, V'chi, kol adam enam etim, ela lelamdecha hagzeira magat, Ela amisha sipek yado lasot v'limchot ve'eno moche. Why did he die? Because he could have stopped them. He could have been moche, he could have prevented the Jewish people from sinning, and he didn't. Ve'ein adam mishayer yitomim ela im kein ayin sara b'mimenomono. Right, why does a person leave, I won't say broadly, but the Midrash does tend to do this. Why does a person leave his children as yitomim? Why? Because there's this idea of ayin sara b'mimenomono. Cheap. Right, according to that, and this shows up actually in Pirkei Avos, it's one of the midot of ayin tov, ayin ra. Right, what does an ayin tov mean? A good ayin means you're a generous person. You're willing to give to other people. An ayin sara, right? Small eye, I got to worry about myself. And that's not a very Jewish attitude, because in reality, that notion of what you have, if we really believe that what we have is from Ribbono Shel Olam that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, then what do you mean I'm not going to give? I don't have enough. Of course you have enough. You know, it all depends on what you think you got and how you think you got it. Okay? So that theme appears as well. Okay? In addition, let's they married these Moaviot, these women Moaviot. Why did they, what was the controversy in the Megillah about them marrying Moabite women? What was the huge controversy when Naomi comes back and Ruth comes back and wants to get married? There's a huge controversy about what to do with Ruth. Right, there's a pasuk, okay, that says the following. Lo yavo amoni u'moavi b'kal Hashem. Now, let's. Can anybody know what the rest of the pasuk is? Meaning, you're not allowed to marry. Very good, very good. Okay, there's that Beis Yaakov of education coming out. Okay, you may not marry.
It's not Beis Yaakov of education. My father made me go to shul every Shabbos.
It's terrible. Okay. Hold on a second. Here we are. Did you hate it?
No, I liked Tanakh.
Oh, so you listened to the parsha?
Yeah.
Well, that's unusual. Lo yavo amoni u'moavi b'kal Hashem. Right? An amoni and a moavi cannot enter into the kal Hashem. Gam dor asiri lo yavo b'kal Hashem ad olam. Right? No amon and moav can mix into the kal Hashem. This idea, by the way, of nationhood, and like it's strange to us. You know, some from amon and moav, they can convert. They can never marry into the Kahal Hashem. They're always separate. Why? Al Dvar, for the following reason. Asher lo kidmu etchem balechem uvamayim baderech b'tzeitchem mimitzrayim. What's the first reason? Right? You were on the way out and you asked them for help. And what did they say?
No.
So just know that there's this interesting...
Oh, it's more than we asked for help. We offered to pay.
Right.
And they still said.
Yes, that's true. If somebody asks you for something and you say, you know, and they offer to pay, is that going to make you want to do it? You know what I'm saying? It's the nature. And says, can I have a glass of water? And you say no. And what would you say?
Well, I
know, I don't know probably. I know definitely what would you say. Are you kidding? You know what I'm saying? Right, you know, here.
No, so I'm saying it's like even more than, it's not that they just didn't go and bring you water. Moshe tried to make a financial agreement with them to pay them for their services.
Right, he tried to, and they said no. But that's not what it says. What does the pasuk say?
Asher
lo kidmu etchem balechem ubamayim. Right, they have a trait of selfishness, of what, stinginess, of what's ours is ours. You worry about yourself. Right, that's their trait, and for that reason, no Amon and Moab in the Kahal Hashem.
And it makes perfect sense that Elimelech's children would want to marry into that culture.
Right, or that they did. that is the idea behind it, that they were, they sort of fit in, and that's exactly why they did well. Okay, just a nice other midrash. I remember when I was in Yeshiva, in Shalvim, so we were there in 1991. And, we got a twofer, okay?
You got what?
A twofer. In 1991 was the Gulf War, the Mechemet HaMifratz. Was anybody in Israel during that time? You were there? So it was big in the yeshivot at the time that many American institutions were kind of packing up and leaving at the time. You know what I'm saying? all the kids' parents called them and said, you're coming home, you know. There were Scud missiles falling in Israel. Yeah, it was kind of scary. But we were very proud of the fact that in the Hezer Yeshiva, we did not leave. I mean, you know, only I think one or two people left. And one of the reasons I'm sure that we didn't leave is because they guilted us about it. You know, they made it a very strong priority for us to understand that you have to be...
Yeah, for the good and the bad.
Yes, right. You have to be a part of Am Yisrael and that you're here for, like, you know, for the good and for the bad. Right? And the thing I remember quite clearly that the Rabbanim talked about quite extensively was this idea of Elimelech. That when it was good for him, then he stayed in Beit Lechem Yehuda. But as soon as things got tough, he packed out. And you never benefit by packing out. And by the way, ironically, I think truthfully, there's a tremendous amount of truth for that. You know, thank God nothing happened to us. We were all fine. But in addition to that, it was a very, very traumatic experience. I mean, you know, do you remember the gas masks and the whole thing? And anybody who was here knows it was really scary. You know, nobody really knew what it's Saddam Hussein have.
You had a baby in a tent. Oh no, you're a cancer.
It was. Yeah, I mean, do you know what I'm saying?
But to put the baby in the tent.
Like if you think now, like we went to the Mamad, the couple of times now that we went to the Mamad, and that was a little scary. So now, but then everybody walked around with a gas mask here. And, like, you know, you not only had to run to your mamad, you had to put on this gas mask, and it was really a scary time, especially the beginning. It was quite, quite frightening, yeah?
First night, my aunt called from permit class, because her husband and her son and her daughter were all in the army, were all called back. So she was just with her youngest son, I think. And back then, it cost like $5 a minute. And she was on the phone with my father for half an hour.
Wow.
She was just, like, nervous, and she needed to talk to someone in her class. And we were just like, you know, she was on the, you know, back then, now it's not a big deal. You know, but back then you did not talk on the phone for half an hour.
Right.
45 minutes.
Right. And it was scary. And I remember also, like, you remember things about it. Like, on the radio, they would play children's songs. Because everybody knew that the kids are, you know, must have been most nervous that they would just play these children's songs, you know, through the whole time that you had to be in your sealed room. It was really, really a frightening time. And ironically, I wouldn't say ironically, I definitely gained a much, much stronger connection to Eretz Yisrael for having been here in the Gulf War than had I gone home, without a doubt. Because as we all know, the things you sacrifice for, the things you give to, are the things that are meaningful to you. It's almost like in a reverse kind of way. It doesn't mean, you know, we had a...
I wonder if more people from this year, more English...
From that year? A number of us, a lot of us did. It's a lot. It's interesting. I don't know. It's very interesting. You know, like we had a man, Rina knows who this person is. We had a member of our shul once who came to me and said, we're not getting what we expected out of our shul membership. And I said to Rina, what I wanted to say to them, but I couldn't was, you're not getting what you expected because you're not putting in what you're supposed to. Right? People think that in any relationship, you're supposed to get out of it, and that's why you give back. Whereas in reality, the exact opposite is true. You give back only what you get in. And the same is true of Eretz Yisrael. Right? You have this connection to Eretz Yisrael because you're invested in it, because you're connected to it, because you know you're here, and the bombs are falling, and I'm still here. Right? And that creates a connection. And that's exactly what Elimelech didn't do. And he lost his children because of it. So says the Gemara. This is Gemara in Babatra. Tanur Rabbanan. Ein yotzi me'eretz l'chutz la'aretz. One may not leave Eretz Yisrael. Ela im kein amdu sa'atayim b'sela. Unless you lose so much money that something that was worth double now is only worth half. So you can't really make a living. That'd be now. Okay, anyway. It's not half yet, is it half?
No, but...
My house in America is worth half.
Most people who come here take a huge reduction in their salaries and their...
Wait a second. Let's... be honest about that and say, hold on, are they also deducting their tuition expenses? And they're deducting their health care expenses? Right. No way. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, but it's still a 50% cut.
Even so, you think it's a 50% cut in salary?
There are other things that cost more. You know, property costs more, and food costs more, and clothes costs more.
Because the only things that are cheaper are actually school and health.
Right.
Like everything else, you know. And,
but
and
school and healthcare. School. But school is such a huge, huge expense in the States. That's all they talk about now. That, you know, it's...
Yeah, but...
It's
free in
England.
It's free in England?
And in Australia also.
In England it was a lot cheaper than here.
Okay, you guys are better than us. So we just came for the money. No, I mean, you know...
No, but they say, if you want to be a millionaire, it's really about to become a millionaire.
You become 2 million. Here, you become 2 million.
Yeah. You lose it. You do lose half.
Well, that's true. But you don't come for the money. What?
But you get a lot back.
That's right.
It's all comparison.
Okay. But it's all comparison, isn't it? It's all comparison. Okay. Chen haya Rabbi Shimon. This is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, Elimelech Machlon v'Kilion Gidolei Hador Hayu. Imagine, like they were the. Can you imagine, by the way, how much demoralizing that is? You read, like, open up, you know, Mishpacha magazine. Rabbi Eliashiv Choser LaArtzot Habrit. Can you imagine, like, what that would do? You know what I'm saying? To, you know, Gari Rebbe Choser LaBoston. You know, like, can you, like, what would that say? You know, Rabbi Eliyahu decides to move to Mexico. You know, can't make it here.
Because he's such a blessed. I was willing to sacrifice the rookness of his children. And
sort of
he's so interested in the
sort of
physical
God
that
speaks
out of the kingdom
spiritually. Was he really? Such a God of Hador? I don't know. I'm not sure. That's what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says. That they were G'dol Hador, Uparnasei Hador. You know, that you're not talking about some schlub, right? The reason why this story is so important is because these were, like, really big people. He's done great. They were, you know what I'm saying? These are really, really big people. And you can imagine how much, you know, their departure affected not just themselves, but affected the people around them. Like, they bailed. And so they were punished. Okay. Let's move on. I want to read the end of the parak. We'll read the end of the verse parak. So, Pasuk Zion. Is that my mind to Pasuk Zion? Oh, they died. Pasuk Vav. Vatakam he. So now Naomi is left with nothing. V'chalotea and her daughters-in-law. Vatasha b'stei Moab. They start coming back. Ki shama b'stei Moab. Ki pashkar Hashem amo latet lehem lachem. Because she heard that Hashem had redeemed his nation to give them bread. So they decide to leave. And they start traveling back. So Naomi says, Lechna, to her two daughters-in-law, Lechna shovna isha lebeit ima, go home. Why? Yas Hashem imachem chesed, kashem esitem ima metim v'amadi. So Hashem should do chesed just like you did with the dead and with me. Why does Naomi want them to go home?
Her association with everything, I think she wants to forget about what happened in Moab.
And start over, whatever. Yeah.
In a way, she wants to protect them because they're going to be rejected.
And they are going to be rejected. That's definitely true. Anyone else want to suggest why she wants them to go home? It's not in their interest. By the way, what's going to happen to them when they go back to Moab? The Moabite women who married the Jewish men in Moab.
Probably won't be accepted there either.
Right.
She doesn't have any way to support them.
Okay.
That's extra baggage.
Extra baggage? Well, if you say that, then what does it make her? Listen to what my midrash says.
You can figure out everybody's relationships with their mothers and their right. Okay.
No, but not that she says that they did chesed. It seems that they had a good relationship. Yeah. Right. She doesn't say leave because you're nasty
daughters. Mipnei ma hayta mechazeret otan, says the midrash. Why was she sending them back? Kadesh shelo
titbayesh bahen. So she wouldn't be embarrassed.
Yeah. Can you imagine you come back with, and who? Oh, who's with her? What? Credit. By the way, how do they refer to Ruth throughout the entire Megillah? Everyone except for Boab. What? Ruth Hamoaviyah. Right?
It was like saying, let's say it again.
No. That's right. That's right. It's exact connotation.
No, but I think it's more.
She brought her shiksa daughter-in-law back.
I think it's more than that even, because like you could have had like, you know, any woman that converted from any other nation, but like there was an extra stigma.
Who would convert?
I don't know why they would convert, but I'm saying like
in the times of the Shoftim?
No, but what I'm saying is that Is that, I'm saying in particular, it's like putting an extra, you know, brand on her.
That she's a...
She's the one that we said, like, it would be like today saying the Nazi girl that she brought, you know?
You mean because like, she's a Moavia?
Putting the Moavia is like, that's the worst of the worst.
Right, because you can't convert. Right, because you can't convert. Right, not only is she a shiksa, even if she says she converted, she didn't convert. Absolutely correct. Okay, but there's an interesting, I just found that midrash interesting, that Nomi still, like, she doesn't want her to come back. And what's the irony of the fact, in the end, she says, I don't want Ruth to embarrass me. And what's the end result of Ruth's returning with her?
She uplifts her.
She has her pride and joy. Like, it's her, Ruth is Nomi's salvation. In a sense, and really is such a redeeming quality. Okay, that's right. That's right. Yiten Hashem pasuk tet. Yiten Hashem lachem umetzena menucha isha beit isha. Go home. You should find in your own households. Batishak lahem, and she kissed them. Batisena kolana batikena, and they raise up their voices and they wailed. Batomar na la ki itachna shuv la mech. No, we're with you. Batomer Naami, Shovna Benotai, Lamate Lachnani, go home. Ha'odi Banim Bimayai, Vayulachem Lanashim. What, you think I'm going to make you more husbands? Not going to happen. Shovna Benotai, Lechna, bless you. Ki Zakantim Yod Ve'ish. I'm old. Ki Amarti, Yesh.
They're going to the Knesset, Tzivra Torah.
Oh, they are? It's today?
All the Ganim are going to the Knesset.
Is it like a special one? They're making an additional one?
I don't know.
Ki Amarti, Yesh Li Tikva, Vagam Hayiti Halayla Le'ish, Gam Yalalati Banim. Let's say I got married. Let's say I had more sons. Halahenti shaberna adashidalu. Halahenti agena libutia yotish. By the time my children get old enough for you to marry, you'll be old maids. You'll be old. Albinotai, no, my daughters. Kimar li ma'od mikem ki yatzav yad Hashem. It's very bitter for me. God has rebuked me. God has punished me. Go home. Batisana kolana batifkena. Oh, they cried. Batishak or palachamota verut davkaba. Orpah kissed her
and walked off.
And it doesn't say. And Ruth clung to her. Now, what did Orpah do? That's it. Okay, she was convinced. You got me. Life is going to be better staying here than it will be. So now I got one down, one to go. Okay, so she said, you know, you're gone. And they say, so Vatomer Hinei Shava Yivimtech El Ama Ve El Eloheha. It's interesting. El Ama, she went back to her Ama, her nation, and Eloheha. Right. You have to understand, so did they convert? It's a bit machlok. Did Ruth and Orpah convert or not? Many poskim say that, many mafarshim say that they did convert. That they had converted in order to marry into, you know, they nice Jewish households. But what is it, what's the level of the conversion? We don't really see conversion in that way. You know, it's an acceptance of a lifestyle, in a sense. Yeah, sure, I'll convert. You want me to make kosher? I'll make kosher food. I'm fine, whatever you want. Okay, but that's where they saw it. So when you left the household, when you stopped living with the Jews, you just go back. It's not a contradiction. Like, we think of things like conversion is an acceptance, it's a lifestyle, it's a lifelong change. But for many people, and I think it's like that now. I mean, look at how I think many, I'll say for my country, Americans look at conversion. It's like, I'll try it. The way they look at marriage, in a sense. Yeah, I'll give it a shot. And it'll be good for now, and then when I decide I don't want to be married anymore, then I won't be married anymore. I really get a sense just seeing, like, the media and the way people write about it, in a sense. Like, it was good, I'm glad I got married, it was a good life experience, and then I didn't want to be married anymore. It's not like you make lifelong decisions and you stay with them, you know? And nobody does that anymore. So that's the way it was. Okay? But Tomer Ruth, Al Tifki'i B'Lazvech L'Shub B'Acharech. Leave me alone, she said. She said, leave me alone. The very Ruth's famous statement, where you go, I will go. Where you least leave, I will lie. Amech ami, Elohaich Elohai. I'm not like her. She was the conversion of convenience. Fine. I really bought into this system. Right? Your God is my God, your nation is my nation. Where you die, I die, and I will be buried there. Right? The only thing that's going to separate us is if one of us dies. So stop it, leave me alone, I'm sticking with you. Now, by the way, Ruth, obviously, as we all know, is the model for Giyur, for conversion. You know what the first thing we tell someone? Someone comes and says, I want to convert. You know what the first thing we say to them is? Why? Why? No, no, why? Why do we tell them to go away?
No?
She's the model. She's the model.
You don't want someone who's not really, really, really interested.
How do you know? What's the test? What do you tell them in order to find out if they're really, really interested?
They're going to have to be cut off from their family.
What do you mean, can you cope with the rejection?
Can the person, you don't really
want to
do
this. Oh, that's the test. I mean, they keep coming after you. Yeah. That's true. Right? We do push them away for that reason. But there's even more than that. What's the first thing we tell them? This is the Gemara. This is halacha. It's brought down according to the Rambam. We say to them the following. Iyata yodea shi Yisrael bizman ha-yizeh d'rvuyim, d'chufim, s'chufim, and muturafim. Do you know what it means to be a Jew? Do you really want this? Yisrim b'ayim aleim. We're persecuted. We're oppressed. You really want this? Im omer yodea ani ve'eini kedai. If he says, listen to the language, very powerful. I know, and I don't deserve it to be a member of that people. What does that mean, I don't deserve it, eini kedai?
They're above me.
They're better than me. Then mekablin oto miyad. You accept him, this idea of three times? It's not really true. Mekablin oto miyad. You accept him, according to the Rambam, you accept him right away. Mekablin oto. What's the interesting underlying value of the conversion? What's the underlying value that we're asking? Why do you want this? Are you doing it because you are selfish or because you're selfless? Do you want to join the Jewish people because of what you have to gain? Or do you want to join the Jewish people because of what you have to give? Any could die. I don't have enough to give. I'm not worthy. I don't belong with them. But still. Right? But if you're joining the Jewish people because you want to marry a husband, or in general, you know, because Jewish people have it well, they're respected, they're honored, they're whatever. No, then we don't want you. Why? Because that's not what being a Jew is all about. It's about the giving. It's not about the taking. And it's interesting, it says, and then he says, you accept him, and then you tell him, mitzvot mitzvot kalot, mitzvot mitzvot chamurot. In the ideal form of giyur, right, of conversion, you don't have to like go through a year's courses and, you know, and live with a family and do all those things. The reason we make people do that nowadays is because it's very difficult to gauge someone's authenticity. You know how many giyurim, I always love this statistic, I was listening to, I think, a lecture from Rabbi J.J. Schechter. How many giyurim there were? How many converts there were in like Vilna in the 1700s and 1800s? They know exactly how many there were because they have the ledgers, historical ledgers for the communities. You remember? There was one. And the Christians killed him like the next night. And they say that they used to go out to his keber, if I recall, and Tikkun Lo Shavuos. Like, and say to Tehillim and do an askara for him on Tikkun Lo Shavuos. Why? Who in their right mind would want to be a Jew in Europe in the Middle Ages? You know? That's the idea. That's what Ruth was coming to. Amech, Ami, Elohayach, Elohai. Now remember, the Jews in the days of the Shoftim, what was the situation of the Jews in the Shoftim?
Not good.
Bad. Really persecuted. Plishtim.
They didn't have all the...
They had nothing. They were like, you know, they would survive from pillage to pillage. Who needs that? Let's skip until the end. So we showed you the underlying assumptions or the underlying theme of Elimelech, Machlon, Kilion. Even Naomi, to some degree, she doesn't come off so well for me, from this perspective. By the way, let's just go 1 second. And she comes back. They come back. Skip to Pasuk Chaf. Look what she says. They say, oh my God, Vatomarna Hazot Naomi. That's Naomi. What does the word Naomi mean? Noam. What's Noam?
Pleasant.
Vatomar Alehem. Al tikrana li Naomi. Don't call me Naomi. Krana li Mara. What do you call me?
Bitter.
Bitter. In essence, think about our theme. I don't deserve a name. Why don't I deserve a name? Because I acted.
Oh my God.
I acted.
This is why we're here. I'm so sorry.
I wish I had a camera.
Yeah. I acted out of selfishness. That's Kabbalah Torah, huh? I acted out of selfishness.
Oh, no.
And therefore, I don't deserve a name. You call me, my name Manami, gone. Call me Mara. Okay, let's skip to the end. Skip to Parak Dalet. Ruth has to find a husband, okay? Who's the only logical candidate for the husband, for her as a husband? Why Boaz? He's the only person who actually talked to her. Right? Everybody else ignored her. Acknowledged her. What's that?
That narrows it down.
Yeah, really. Of course, he's like 75 and whatever. What are you going to do? Okay?
But he was also a chauffeur.
He was also a chauffeur. Okay? So she goes and whatever, et cetera, et cetera. Now let's go to chapter 4. Let me see if I can find here.
You know, but the Midrashim about Boaz in Sefer Shoftim are not very complimentary of him.
Really?
Yes. That in his attempt to be caring and sensitive towards other people, the Midrash says that he was insensitive in his attempt to be sensitive.
I don't
that
remember.
He had 70 sons and 70
daughters. Oh, yes.
And he married them off. He made all those weddings, and he never invited Manoach and Eshet Manoach,
didn't they all
because
die
they didn't they? Have children.
Didn't he lose all those
right,
children?
Right, and all of them died because didn't invite the barren couple to his wedding because he didn't want to make them feel bad that they wouldn't do it.
It's a scary one. You know, you try to do something for the right reasons and you lose all your children. I don't know. Perek Dalet. Uboaz Allah HaShahar. Vayeshev Shem. Boaz went to the gate and he stood there. Vihinei HaGoel Over Asher Diber Boaz. And here is the Goel. What does a goel mean? Here's how it works, right? The redeemer, when a person dies, okay, in halacha, his next closest relative has the right and the obligation to be goel, to redeem his fields, but also to marry his wife, okay? What do we call that mitzvah of marrying the wife?
Yibum.
What happens when you marry, what's yibum? Yibum, God forbid, a person, God forbid a person dies without children, and he leaves a wife, right? Without children, so what happens? What's supposed to happen? His brother, right, is a little unusual, but his brother marries the wife, and the first child they have
is named for the dad's
wife. Right, so let's say they name the child, you know, Binyamin. So be Binyamin, they'll call him Ben, the dead guy, okay? Yibum is an act of utter
selflessness,
right? Because in a sense, you have all the responsibilities of this child. But you don't even have the right of fatherhood, in a sense. They don't even call that child by your name. And the reason why we don't do Yibum nowadays, the reason why the Rabbanim, they made a Gzeirah or whatever, we only do Chalitza, is because they saw that people were unable to do Yibum for the right reasons. Rather, they were doing it out of selfishness and not selflessness. Okay, that's what Yibum is.
That's the question about mm-hmm. it. If then, after that firstborn child, they don't have any other children, and he dies.
No, it still has a considered as a child. There's no more you. Yeah.
It's still, like for those purposes, it's considered as
yes,
a child.
Yes, I think it goes both ways.
And does he, if they have no children after, is it considered that he was fulfilling the mitzvah of Pururvu?
Oh, they only have one child?
If they only have the child, that's right, consider the child.
There's no mitzvah Pururvu until you have born a girl anyway.
Okay.
And so, and who's this guy? Vayomer suru shvapo ploni almoni.
Vayasa
vayeshev. Isn't that interesting? Right? Ploni almoni is not his real name. Ploni almoni is the universal anonymous name.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that interesting? Mm-hmm. Why does Ploni almoni not have a name? Because we'll see. Vayikach asara anashim mizikne Yisrael. Vayomer shvupo vayeshev. They took a minion. Vayomer legoel. Chalkata sadeh asher laachinu leelimelech. Naomi had to sell her fields. So remember, the halacha is that if you sell your fields, the goel has the right and the obligation to buy them back. Okay, but Ani Amarti.
Even so, they're calling her Naomi Hashava Mistei Moav. Naomi, the one who came back from Stei Moav, she still has that identification.
Very good. Okay, but Ani Amarti Eglaz Nachalei Mor, and I said, I'll tell you, Kinei Negad Yoshvim VeNegazik Naomi Im Tigal Gaal VeIm Lo Gaal Yigal Hagidali VeEda. So if you want to buy the field, buy the field. And if you don't want to buy the field, let me know. And I'll do it. So what does the guy say?
I'll
take it. I'll buy the field. Hold on. Vayomer Boaz. Great. No problem. And as an extra parting gift, I throw in. He didn't add this, by the way. Bruta mo'avia eshet hamet. Kaniti lakim shem hamet anachlato. You also get Ruth as a As a bonus.
And he calls her Hamoavia to sour him on it, maybe.
Interesting. He calls it Hamoavia. Okay. Vayama HaGoel. Lo uch'al lig'ol pen ashchit et nachalati. I can't. Why?
Bad blood.
He says exactly why. Bring bad blood in his family. Rashi says, Zar'i, kemo nachalat Hashem, latet pigam lezar'i. What was he worried about?
His grandchildren won't be Jewish.
Yeah, what's going to happen? My other children are going to want to get married. Nothing's changed. My other children are going to want to get married, and they're going to say, well, I mean, hey, you know, he's got two, you know, night tables. Plus, he's also married to a Moabia. Okay, now, by the way, we're critical of them, but this issue of Amoni velo Amonit, because remember, it was a machloket l'halacha. This issue continues all the way down to where? Anybody know how far down it goes? This issue of Amoni v'lo Amonit? All the way to David HaMelech. The Midrash brings stories. Later on in the Navi, when David is gaining in prominence, there's this huge debate among Shaul's servants and his henchmen about, is this David guy who's, you know, killed Goliath and all that, is he, who is he? Right? And they try to defame him by claiming, yeah, he's not really Jewish anyway. David HaMelech. Like all the way down, right? You know, living with this. He lives with this, I would say,
stigma.
Right. He's a person who has a stigma about him all the way through. Until, of course, he's appointed king and, you know, God likes him and all that. But they're living with this. So the idea that this Ploni Almoni won't want to, I find it interesting that we don't find out his name, that there's a certain safety in his anonymity. That the Navi doesn't blame him necessarily. Like, it's asking a lot for a person to do that. Okay? And Boaz does. So then Boaz says, okay, you know what he says? He says, I'll do it. Okay? I'll go out to Boaz. And he does chalitza. You do it. Okay? You are witnesses. Asher kaniti et asher leli melech. Wait, a kol asher lechilyon umachlon yad na'ami. V'gam et ruta moavya ish et machlon kaniti li isha. Lahakim shem amit al nachalato. Right? And I'm doing this, why? Lahakim shem amit. V'lo yikaret shem amit me'im echav v'misham mekamo edim etem hayom. And he does. And I think that this is definitely the underlying nature of what the Megillah is all about. Of this notion of that Boaz acts out of completely selfless nature. I'm doing it, Lahakim, what does he need it for? The Midrash says that, you know, after the one night with Rut, well, we never hear from Boaz again. Says he died that night. Right? He needed Ruth like he needed a hole in the head. You know what I'm saying? Like, he needs another, you know. But he does it because he knows it's the right thing to do. And he says, just like you did chesed with Naomi, I'll do chesed with you. And if you ask me, I think this is a very powerful theme, especially when it comes to Kabbalah Torah. Because this notion of selflessness versus selfishness, we're all noted in a sense to what's in it for me, and, you know, I'm not really getting very much out of this, and, you know, I want to feel it, and et cetera, et cetera. And I think that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us is to understand that the essence of being a Jewish person is, you know, Alpha Piki, just like Ruth said, like, you know, when a person converts, right, the language of being a Jew isn't just for a convert. The convert has to make an active decision. But nonetheless, you say, Yodeani ve'eni kidai. Like, I know the obligations that the Torah places on me. I know the responsibilities that I have when we, the Jewish people, receive the Torah. And I know all of it, and I'm not worthy to have those responsibilities. And that's, I take upon myself that responsibility out of selflessness and out of selfishness. And I think that's a very beautiful and powerful message for all of us as we enter into Matan Torah Teinu.